Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Tonight I'm going to be chatting with TJ Scott. He's a television director, film director, award-winning. He has already won the Canadian Screen Award Best Direction for Orphan Black. And he and the cast of Caught got nominated for a new awards for the Canadian Screen Awards, including TJ for director. So congratulations, you guys. Yay! We're going to be talking about his new series that's called Departure, which I was super duper excited about because one of my favorite people's in it. We're also talking about Frontier, which was really interesting, Star Trek Discovery. I won't tell you what he talks about, and V-Wars. A couple of notes. One, during the recording, I had a super bad cold, so apologies for that. And also, because it is a recording, please don't call in during the broadcast. Here's DJ. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Nice to be here again.
I haven't talked to you in a while. How are you doing?
It has been a little bit of a while. I've been good. I've been busy.
Yeah. The last time you were doing like back-to-back between different shows and doing your new book, and now the book is out. I mean, that is really cool.
Yeah. Well, I haven't changed that much in that I'm still doing shows back to back. It's kind of how I like it. And,
okay.
And we have a book out on Kickstarter right now that we're trying to get people to pre-order.
That's an unusual way to go, Kickstarter, for a book. Why did you choose that form?
Kickstarter is an interesting way of going because it kind of gives you an idea of what the popularity of a book is. We've done a few different types of book now. We've done the In the Tub series that I do where all the profits go to breast cancer research. And then we do very targeted ones about TV shows. We did one for the TV series Longmire,
mm-hmm.
which is a very loyal fan base, and we sold a lot of books. But it's a completely different market than In the Tub, and now we're doing one for Jason Momoa's series Frontier, where I directed on it, and my photography partner, Dennis Illich, embedded himself with the crew, and we shoot kind of behind the scenes, but it's more elegant, more like old-school publicity shots. Very beautiful, but it's a rugged, rugged terrain, and snowy and cold, and it just looks amazing in photos.
That reminds me, there was a show on Turner Classic Movies where I can't remember the name of the guy. He was a really well-known TV presenter, and he did a lot of behind-the-camera stuff, but a lot of the camera stuff wasn't just his. It was like Cary Grant and Jack Lemmon and Lucille Ball and all these people. It's amazing how many people in show business love to do film.
Well, it's because there's a lot of spare time while shots are being set up, so it actually gives you something artistic to do while you're waiting for things.
It's just, more I watch, I mean, all my friends from behind camera that aren't directors or cameramen, they're like writers, they all do camera work, everybody. And all the actors I know, not all, but like I'd say a large majority do it too. So it must be like because it's easy or something, even though back then they had the huge cameras. But even, I mean, today it's really easy with your cell phone.
Well, it's a lot easier even with your DSLs because you don't have to go and get the footage processed, you know, and you can actually do your own processing, obviously, on Photoshop. And it's digital, so it doesn't cost, so you can shoot as much as you want. So it becomes kind of a fun hobby that way. What we try and do is create images and books that aren't just snapshots. They're more portraits and thought out, and a little bit more meticulous and character driven than just snapping stuff on set. And they're also a lot of the time not while we're filming, but we take the actors off, so it's sort of akin to the show, not exactly the show.
That's interesting. So it's like artistic format of the show.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so cool that everybody's into cameras. I mean, I think it gives everyone an appreciation when you get a really good photo, how hard it is, because people snap and snap and snap, and they always go, ah, damn, I got one good one. But so they kind of see how hard it is to get something that's really epic and beautiful.
Yeah, I figured that out when I took my photography class, and I realized what a bad photographer I was.
I think some people just have the eye.
I was back in college. I was like, I got a really good camera, and I got all the equipment that you're supposed to get for the class, and I did all the assignments I was supposed to do, and as I looked at the pictures, and I went, blah, blah, blah.
You know what? It makes a huge difference when you're shooting a very photographic person.
On
Frontier, we're shooting Jason Momoa. It's hard to take a bad photo of Jason Momoa. So the subject can be a big thing. And Landon Librion, who's the other star of it, you know, everyone that was on that show had a very cinematic face. So that makes it 10 times easier.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true. Oh, and I saw that Adrian put up your picture that you did for In the Tub with the milk. I can't remember if it was Instagram or Facebook. But
who
put
it up?
Yeah.
Who did? Who?
Adrian.
Oh, Adrian, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. She loves those photos and promotes the book a lot.
Yeah, she put the whole promotion of the book and everything. I thought that was so nice.
Yeah, if people haven't seen that book yet, there's two versions, two different volumes of In the Tub, and I shot 300 celebrities in bathtubs using it as a common setting, and all the profit goes to breast cancer research. And the books are still available. The special editions are almost all sold out, but definitely check it out and buy a copy. It's a great present for people.
I got the first one. It's beautiful.
Yeah, they really are, you know, even though I made it myself, I'm very proud of it.
I think you're allowed to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you set out to make something, you're not necessarily sure it's going to be great. It's like every TV series you work on, you hope it's great, but they're not all great. But I was really pleased with how the books came out.
What is how's it doing for the breast cancer research? I mean, how much money has it raised?
I don't exactly know. It's it just kind of trickles through. It's the profit, so it has to cover the cost of the books, and books are expensive, and shipping. So book by book, it's a different amount of money. If someone happens to be close to where our shipping facility is, it costs way less, so the profit's higher. Sometimes when they're in Germany, I lose money on shipping it. So, but I take all the loss myself, so it's okay.
Well, I'm sure that they think that they're helping, so.
Well, it is, even if the word spreads. And part of it, too, is breast cancer awareness, too. So the more that people talk about it, and it's out there on the kitchen table or on the coffee table, the more people will talk about it, the more people get self-exams and stuff. So it pays off that way, too. It's not just money.
Yeah, I usually have it as on my coffee table, but unfortunately it's in a box right now. I just moved. I haven't gotten to all my books yet.
I think I was just working with one of your heroes.
You were? I am so excited. You worked with Christopher Plummer. Oh, my God.
Yeah, such a prince. I just directed 6 episodes and executive produced a limited series called Departure. And he was the second lead on it, him and Archie Panjabi, who was nominated for... Oh, no, she actually won. She's been nominated 3 times for Emmys, but won 2 years ago for The Good Wife. And, oh, my gosh, they were fantastic. And then we had a great ensemble cast around them. But Christopher Plummer is just a prince, one of the sweetest men I've ever worked with.
Oh, I'm so glad. I've loved him since I was a little girl. I mean, this is going to sound corny, but when I saw him in Sound of Music as the captain.
You and every other woman, yes. And you know what? He's still got this amazing, magnetic, charismatic sexuality to him. He turned 89 while we were shooting, and he's just whip smart. And you put the camera in front of him, and he just glows. It's quite amazing. You don't have to do too much. Just put the camera in front of him, and you've got a great shot.
It's just interesting because one of my favorite movies that he was in was Somewhere in Time. He played the bad guy, but his opposition was young, handsome Christopher Reeves, and it was like it was real competition. I mean, it was really, you know, he was much older, but yeah, he glowed.
He's got it. He's got the it factor.
Yeah.
He's the only actor that I had to call Mr. in my entire career. It was just like Mr. Plummer, and he'd say, "Oh, TJ, call me Chris." And I'd say, "Yes, Mr. Plummer, I will." And then the next day he'd go, "TJ, it's Christopher." And "Yes, Mr. Plummer." I just could not call him Chris or Christopher. It just had to be Mr. Plummer. But it's the only time I've ever come across someone where it was like that, but it just felt right to call him that. It's the due respect for his career and for his personality and his presence.
I mean, the man is a Shakespearean stage actor. I mean, he's done everything. I can understand. I would be, "Yes, sir, Mr. Plummer." Yes, I'd probably say it just like that.
Yeah, he's quite amazing. And the TV series is really fun. It's called Departure. It won't come out until probably the summer.
What's it about?
But it's about this investigative team that investigates huge transport incidents. And in this one, the whole season, the case is around solving an airplane disappearance, a plane that disappears between New York City and London, sort of like Malaysia Air did, where
yeah.
There's clues, but you don't know how, where it went down. They just lost track of it. And our team has to figure out, you know, is it engine failure? Is it a manufacturer thing? Is it, is it pilot suicide? Was it terrorist attack? So they've got all these different points that they're going to. But at the same time, they need to be deploying helicopters out to the site to try and find people to see if there's survivors. They're figuring out theories of how the transponder could have been turned off. It's a really, really fun investigative roller coaster ride, and sort of has, murder mystery conspiracy rolled into it. So super fun, and to have Christopher involved in that was really good because he can twist and turn his character, and you just don't know where he's coming from.
Is he the head of the unit?
Yes, he's not the head investigator, but he's in head of the whole unit. So it's sort of like being, you know, in a police station. There's a lot of ongoing murder cases, and there's the team that's following one murder. Archie Punjabi runs that little squad, but he runs the whole thing, so there'll be lots of cases going on. But he's the person we check in with all the time. Just fantastic.
Cool. It sounds, I'd like that. That sounds really cool. I was actually quite shocked about the Malaysia thing because it's like in today's day and age, it's shocking that they could lose a plane like that with all the satellites and everything that they do. I still find it shocking that it happened.
It really is, and I really studied the Malaysia Air once in detail so that I could, you know, apply what I found on that into our mini series, and wow, there are a lot of twists and turns of what it could have been in Malaysia, and I think we've got that too. And you don't think about all the different things until they're brought out. So this investigative show really is quite educational, in that it really does get into what might have happened to this plane. It's fictional, but it could be true.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really interesting. So, is it going to be a different case every season? Is that the way it's going to work? Or
yeah, so it's kind of cool. We're already plotting out what the second season might be, and I don't think this gives away, but it may be a huge train derailment in Europe.
Wow, like the speed train or something like that.
Yeah, our cases take place out of London, so this whole squad was in London. And we shot in Toronto, and then I just came back from shooting a month in London, which was super fun.
Oh, I just had the weirdest idea. The last trip of the Orient Express, because I think they're ending that thing again. Something happening on it, you know, that'd be like twisting Agatha Christie with the investigation. I'd have a weird mind.
No, but that's kind of how the series is meant to go. It's supposed to be kind of Agatha Christie, and it's twisting and turning, and all sorts of people could be responsible, and you sort of have to figure out who it is. So, that's a great suggestion, actually.
Thank you.
We are thinking of trains, so that's the iconic one.
Because, the Orient, I read, I don't remember what paper, but they said that they were going, because right now it only goes up to, I think, Venice, and I think they're stopping that because of what's going on with the Euro and all that stuff. And so they said that they'd probably be stopping the Orient Express, and I was like, not again.
I know. Anyways, I will bring that to the writers. That could be a great second season idea. I think people are really going to like this show. It's very slick, very modern, and even though we're in London, I tried to play the very new London, the kind of glass and steel and reflections, and not kind of the old London as much, even while we were there. I actually hadn't realized how much of London actually is very crisp and clean and straight lines and glass and incredible architecture like the Shard. So it was fun to kind of play that as our look for the show.
It's interesting, unlike Los Angeles, where I grew up, London seems to be able to mix and match. They have a whole section that's all modern and glassy, and then right across the street or across the river, it's all old London with the classic red line. And I mean, it's all still, even ancient London is still there. They're still having finds of the Roman time period from, it's London's interesting like that. There's so many different views you can do with it.
Yeah, we were shooting right down in front of the Tate Modern on the Thames, and there's all these people at low tide were down there, and I'm going, what are they doing? And they're going, oh, they're looking for Roman coins.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently they still wash up pretty much every day. You can find a Roman coin, or somebody finds one. So it's a hobby thing for people to find Roman coins, which sounds crazy.
I think it's cool, though. I mean, it's really cool. They said that they were widening the M4, and during that, like most places, they do an archaeological thing, and they found all these artifacts from back to the time of Boudicca.
Jeez.
Isn't that amazing that it's still there?
Well, I found some of the oldest pubs in the city. That's what I did.
I don't think so. Pubs go way back.
Yeah, it was funny because every pub there is the oldest this, the oldest that. They all say, but
ye
very
old,
very fun city to shoot in.
Ye old pub. I remember that. That's one of the things that I thought was kind of cute. Like in Bath, I think they have like at least three ye old pubs there.
Have you had a chance to look at Frontier yet? The Jason Momoa series?
Yes, I did. I did. I really love it.
It's got a real fun look. When I came on to the show last year, kind of one of the things that I wanted to do was go, it's the Hudson's Bay Company, should take place like right near water. So we kind of shifted the show up and put everything on the epic landscapes in Newfoundland right along the waterline, which is kind of crazy because it made us freezing cold for the whole shoot. But you could really see it on camera. What a life they led, those fur traders. The show's like in the 1850s in fur trade in Canada and America, and kind of the battle between the natives and the English and the French for fur trade, which was a huge business, and it's just really epic looking. And you know, Jason wears huge furs, and sometimes that's all. And it's a really cool epic history show, and we stick pretty close to accurate history in it too.
What I found,
call it history adjacent.
Well, I found it really interesting was that a lot of the borders between Canada and the U.S. came from those wars over the fur trade. The fur trade was really important to the American frontier and the Canadian frontier, and that those borders that we still have now came from that period. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Hudson Bay kind of just came in, and it was such a big company and had the backing of the Redcoats from England. They just kind of defined what they were taking over and then said, that's the law. This is what we decree is ours. And that's what a lot of the battles were about. So it was kind of interesting. It wasn't just England. It was this one company was so big that it was fighting on behalf of England, or at least, you know, became why lines were divided that England held on to.
I think that's really fascinating. But it's a really cool show. I actually highly recommend it, and your lead's really cute.
Yeah, it's got a really good cast. In season three, we brought in a lot more. And a lot of them are Jason Momoa has really tight group of friends, and a lot of his friends came on board, his actor friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're all buddies, no wonder.
It was so fun. He's just a fantastic person to work with. He creates an amazing atmosphere on set. He's all about getting the best product he can. He's always there, you know, even when he wasn't on call. He was there first thing in the morning and the last person at night, and we'd talk about the next day's shooting. He's just really wanted to make the show as good as it possibly could be, and he loves that period. Loves the idea of, you know, man against the elements. That's kind of his thing. But he's also very kind of tribal in that Hawaiian way, which is from where he's from, where, you know, your tribe is your family. And he would have at wrap, you know, huge amounts of the cast and crew back to his house for catered dinners pretty much every night. Just
wow.
Keep the tribe fed. It was really an interesting way to work. And I kind of really embraced it and did a little bit of that on my next show, Departure. Where we tried to have group meals after every night and talk about the day and stuff. But he's a great leader, a fantastic person to work with.
That's really cool. I saw him on Graham. He is hilarious. Graham Norton.
Yeah.
He is just really funny. He just takes over a show.
Jason's really cool too because he's very driven. He's got lots of businesses on the go and stuff, and he had always a team with him that was developing other projects. And I really enjoyed that aspect of him. So often, you know, I find that actors have their thing and it's great, but he's got so many things that he's worked on. There's always something to talk to him about, always something on the go. So I really think, you know, he deserves all the accolades and credit and success that he's getting. An Aquaman, just crazy, over $1 billion in sales. It's just crazy.
he was talking about that, but he also was talking about an animated show. He says the first show that he would allow his kids to watch.
don't even know what that is.
I can't remember. He plays a caveman.
Wow, I don't know.
But yeah, he says it's the only show he'll allow his children to watch.
Well, yeah, so, yeah, it's been I've been on a good kind of crazy roll with these different shows.
You also are doing Star Trek?
Yeah, of course, Star Trek's, you know, a total blast. I am not a Trekkie. I did not come from that world. And when I first got offered the show, I was offered something else at the same time, and I told my business partner, I said, oh, I'm going to do one of these, and he said, if you don't do Star Trek, I'm never going to talk to you again. So I kind of made that decision, and once I got on it, I realized what a great decision that was, because it's such a scale show. The sets are just amazing. They'll spend $5 million on a set. That may last for just a few episodes. But they spend a lot of money, but they use it really well. I just walk into the sets, behind the sets, and just agog at, you know, what they're trying to accomplish on TV. feature stuff on it, which is amazing. I just love that as a director. They tell you just, you know, make it bigger, make it bigger. It's great because so often you're told make it smaller, make it smaller. So that's just incredible. Have you been watching the show?
Yeah. I haven't started watching the season yet, but I watched it last season.
I think in the States we're up to episode 5 airs this week. I directed just one episode this season. It was episode 9.
Oh, okay.
So it's coming up.
I saw your shows last season.
Yeah, last season was really fun. I had a parallel universe episode. I think it was episode 11. And it was really fun because I got to turn the show a little bit on its head in terms of look. Because it was a parallel universe, we could make it look different than the universe they were in. So it was really fun to twist and turn the look of a show. Though they ended up, I think, keeping some of the darker look that we came up with for the parallel universe as the present universe.
Uh-oh.
They're really taking that show and just expanding it, and they've just announced there's a new series being spun with it for Michelle Yeoh, and they announced about 4 months ago that Patrick Stewart.
Yes, I'm so excited. Yes.
Should make you happy.
Yes. I am so excited. Picard is back.
it looks like the Picard one is going to shoot in Los Angeles, which is kind of fun.
That is super cool. I can't wait. That's one I'm just on tether hooks for.
Oh, cool. Yeah, Discovery shoots in Toronto, and there's 11 stages in the Pinewood Studios in Toronto, and at some points the show has like up to 9 of them filled with set. It's just amazing.
That's one thing they do. Star Trek does really well. Amazing sets, amazing costumes, amazing makeup. I mean, great, great acting, but it has that production that goes with the great acting. Not every show does that.
Yeah. Well, it becomes a real thing that you have to be aware of as a director because, you know, when they say finals, you know, finals normally means, you know, just everybody check the hair and makeup on everybody, and, you know, it's like a minute or two, and on Star Trek, that can be 15 minutes, because, you know, they got to check the Klingons and the Vulcans, and there's a lot more going on than, you know, just doing someone's normal hair and makeup checks. So it's really interesting. I quite often will, when they call finals, get out my camera and shoot how long finals really takes, because it goes on and on and on.
Well, and it's a big cast, too.
And even, you know, the background cast, they say if you have like a Klingon, say, like a complicated makeup, it can cost like $15,000 a day to have one of those performers, even if they have one line, just because there's such a team that needs to build the head, and they're in 5 hours early, and then there's a team to maintain it, and a team for the wardrobe. It's not just the one person who's on camera. So if you got 10 of those people at the table, it's $150,000 right there before you roll cameras. So absolutely crazy. Like one of my heroes on the show, though, is Doug Jones, who is in The Shape of Water, but he just plays creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on the show, he's got a makeup that takes like 4.5 hours every day get into.
God.
I cannot imagine 4.5 hours getting a head makeup before you get to set. He plays the character Saru.
That's just crazy. Oh my God, the poor man.
You have to be the most patient person in the world, and I guess Doug Jones is, because he continues to play those characters. He played the kind of water monster on Shape of Water. I had worked on another series with him where he was 3 or 4 hours in makeup, so that's just his thing, and it's just incredible. Yeah, Doug Jones was on the series The Strain that Guillermo del Toro created, and he played an ancient. If you're by a computer, just look up Doug Jones and put in The Strain, and then look him up and put in the in his name and put Star Trek and just see what this guy does. It's just one of the most incredible acting things. To be able to do that, to act with in makeup too and have great performance.
I saw Shape of Water. I think he deserved his own Oscar for that one.
He did, and, you know, Guillermo del Toro is such a visionary. It was fun to be able to work with him. And when that show won the Academy Award for Best Picture, it was, of course, Guillermo del Toro that went up, but also Miles Dale. And Miles Dale, is, as the other producer, is one of my childhood friends. And it was so fun to see a friend who's, you know, I've hung out with since I was 16 years old, go up and win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
Oh, my God, how exciting. Wow.
I don't know if you remember on that year they said they were going to have, they were going to give out a CDU for the shortest speech, the shortest acceptance speech. And they ended up giving it to someone who did a 15-second one, but Guillermo did his talk, and then they started to bring up the music, and Miles started to talk and got about a sentence in, and they cut him off, even though he'd won Best Picture. And when I asked him, I said, wow, how was it, you know, to get cut off when you, you know, won the Academy Award for Best Picture? And he said, I should have got the CDU.
He should have.
They gave him half the sentence.
That was like, I remember that. I thought that was really unfair. I mean, it's the end of the program anyway. What are they cutting into the news?
And it's the winner of Best Picture.
I know. I know. Does he even remember? Every time I talk to somebody who won a big award, they don't even remember most of it.
Oh, you would remember.
Because it's like an out-of-body experience or something? I wouldn't know. I've never done that. But, I mean, that's what how it's been described to me.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's true when people do, like, huge events like that sometimes. It's like people at their wedding. They don't necessarily remember their wedding that well because all of a sudden there's so much going on and so many people and such a flurry of activity, and all of a sudden it's over and you forget about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess that would be any big event. But I don't know, I just, every time I've talked to somebody who's won an Emmy or an Oscar or somebody, they say, oh, it was wonderful, but I really can't tell you details because I don't remember them.
I would love to come back in a year or two and tell you how that works.
Good! I want you to.
I'll work on it, see what we can do.
I just think it's sort of funny, and the way the human mind works, that you, one of the most important events of your life, and you can't remember it because you're so out of it because you're in the middle of this important event.
Yeah. I did also work on, since I spoke to you last, I did work on one other series that's kind of cool. It's called V-Wars, and it's not out yet, but it's a new Netflix series. And it's starring Ian Somerhalder from Vampire Diaries. And it's a really cool, fun take on the vampire story.
I actually interviewed the guy who wrote the novel.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I haven't asked him about the TV series, but yeah, last year I interviewed him. And he sent me the book, the first book. So I do know about it now, which I didn't when you first were going to, talking about doing it. So it is a very fascinating concept.
Was it Jonathan Mayberry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's really cool.
Yeah, he's on my show last season.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he's, you know, he's rather involved in it. You know, quite often when they take a book and develop it, they don't keep the writers involved. The original writer, but yeah, he's involved, and I think he's digging what's happening, and really cool to get Ian Somerhalder, because he's got such a following. It's like his Vampire Diaries character is so popular, and it's kind of interesting that he's gone from a vampire show to a vampire show, which is kind of as a marketing thing. You know, he's bringing in our target market. We hope, you know, the show hasn't aired yet. But rather than being the sexy vampire, he's the doctor on this one. And not the vampire, the one who's trying to solve the vampire question. And there's all sorts. sorts of different vampires. And the fun to this story is that every type of blood type that comes from a different culture has a different vampire within them. And if you go back in culture, every culture will have a story that's sort of like a vampire story. You know, there's the Russian ones and there's the Romanian, but there's also like Tasmanian devils. They're all kind of tied in a little bit to a vampire type story, and French ones with Lestat. And so in this one, there's some that are really vicious and some that are romantic and some that really turn into crazy looking creatures. So it's kind of where your bloodline is from is what type of vampire you would become, which I think makes it fun as a viewer, because you can, you know, if you've got a bloodline that's English, you might be one. If you've got a bloodline that's French, you might be another.
What if you're a mutt? What if you've got all kinds of different backgrounds?
I don't know. You might be a mutt.
No, I mean, like, I'm half Romanian on one side of my family, and the other side of...
Perfect for vampires.
I know. Actually, and my grandparents' shtetl was right underneath Vlad's castle. The original, not the one that they made up for the tourists.
Wow.
Yeah, my grandmother used to love to tell stories about it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the fun of this, is that, there is that different lore, so it explores that, as opposed to, you know, in most series, every type of vampire is the same in that particular series. And so in this one, it shifts and changes.
But I just think it's interesting, because I was like, you're saying... If, like, and the other half of me is Russian, German, and English, so, and I'm all of it together, so what do you become?
Like empire just waiting to come out.
A lot.
I'm just Canadian, we probably don't even have them in Canada.
Well, I'm sure they transferred over from England.
We drink frozen blood.
Or France. It depends which part of Canada.
But anyways, I hope people really enjoy that show when it comes out.
When's it due to come out?
I think it comes out in the late fall. I know there was a huge special effects time lag on it. So when we finished filming, you know, they got lots of effects to do. So they took that into account with the release date. So they weren't rushing them. I always find special effects are one of those things that everyone thinks can get done overnight, and they can't. They take time. So the shows that really plot in, they take money and time. So you have to put in both those things in your schedule. And a lot of shows don't, and they don't come out that well. So this show did, though, take that all into account.
That makes sense. I mean, there's a series that I enjoyed that it's sort of like a odd mix of original start. I'm not going to bring it up because you're not in it, but I love it. Can I mention it? It's called The Orville.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
He put so much money in that. The ship is one of the most beautiful ships I think I've ever seen.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's like totally on my list of shows to watch because everybody talks about it.
It's such a good show, really, TJ.
How does it tie into Star Trek?
It doesn't tie in. Well, it ties into Star Trek because of his love of Star Trek, but it's a totally separate universe.
Right. Okay. So it's in the realm of the vein.
It's a nod to.
Right. Okay. Perfect.
There is a Federation. And they are a peacemaking force and a lot of stuff from Star Trek. But basically, it's Seth saying what he thinks about the world through the characters. You know, like most writers.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, I'm gonna watch that for sure. I keep forgetting. Everyone keeps telling me to watch it.
So. Oh, it's such a good, it's become one of my, I save some series, especially this stuff that's online, like Discovery. I love Discovery, but first I have to get through my live shows like The Orville.
And what is it air on?
It's on Fox.
Oh, okay, cool.
And, God, opening was Sunday. I think it's on Thursday? I think. I don't remember. Because we DVR it. We DVR it. But anyway, it's really good. But anyway, what I was trying to say is, because you were talking about production and special effects, Discovery and Orville are the two best examples of that on television that I've seen.
Cool. Well, they really, really work hard on Star Trek to do that. Alex Kurtzman is the executive producer on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex comes out of a great, you know, writing history. You know, he did the Mummy, and I think he wrote Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Star Trek Into the Darkness.
Yeah, that's why I remembered he was in Star Trek.
Yeah, so he wrote one of the Transformers. You know, he writes big, big movies, and he likes big, big movies, and he directed the season opener for this season. And I kind of have a fun tie to him. He came on to Xena in 1997 as like a junior writer when I was on it as a director producer, and we met way back then. And,
I remember that he was in Xena. Did he work for you?
Yeah, he and Roberto Orci were a writing team, and they were the junior writers in one season, and they were running the show the next season. So that's just kind of the way he had a career that just skyrocketed. But he's just, you know, super, super bright and very organized and can deal with people. He's just one of those charismatic people that leads a ship really well. And I think he leads the Star Trek Discovery team really well. And apparently he's going to be kind of the executive in charge of all of these franchises. So he's going to be a very busy man in the next couple of years once they all get rolling.
So he's like Gene Kuhn was in the original Star Trek?
Yeah, he's overseeing, but I think there's going to be 3 or possibly 4 Star Trek series going at once.
That's amazing. I always think it's amazing when one person does all that.
That person does not sleep.
No, I wouldn't think. I think that they have a 24-hour day that continually goes and it never stops.
Yeah, your intravenous food fed. He's got a crazy schedule, I know, because, you know, we try and schedule in meetings, and it's just it squeezes in between these 2 meetings. So, quite remarkable what he does.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I remember seeing his name on Xena. I do.
Wow, it's fun how I've got lots of connections that go back to those Xena and Hercules and Cleopatra 25 Days. All the shows that Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert developed with Universal Television that I worked on in the late 90s. And then still, you know, you end up working with those people. And we did Spartacus, we were working with them all. And it's really fun that Rob Tappert, especially, is very loyal to cast and crew and hires the same people over and over whenever he can. And then Stephen DeKnight was on Spartacus, and he hires the same people over and over. So it's kind of fun how film can work like that. You work with the same people over many years, and sometimes not for 10 years, but then you work for them again. So I can't wait to see what Stephen DeKnight does next. Were you a Spartacus fan? I can't remember.
Yeah, I used to watch it.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to do something really cool next.
Is he going to do... There's rumors that another Spartacus was going to be coming. Is that part of them, or is that another production team?
I don't know. I haven't heard that, so I'm not sure where that came from.
Yeah, I think I saw it on Tumblr or something, somebody talking about it, and I was just a little surprised.
Well, I don't know what he's doing. He's I know he's got an overall deal at FX. Netflix. So whatever he does will be a Netflix show next. So it'll be cool.
We're coming to the end. Did I miss anything that you wanted to mention? And
I think that's all I've been up to since I saw you.
That's a lot. I know you've done it before, but can you give your website so people can say hi?
Yeah, if you go to cinematicpicturesgroup.com, all the books that we produce are there, including the In the Tubs and Frontier will be there, and Longmire. And, I don't think I told you, we actually shot a Star Trek coffee table book, and we'll be Kickstartering it soon. And we were given unprecedented access to behind the scenes on Star Trek. And once again, Dennis Illich, my photography partner, embedded himself for the entire time I shot my episode. And then we shot offset with the actors and CBS and the whole people that have to sign off on there being an official Star Trek book signed off on this. It took us about 6 months to put the deal together. So soon this our Star Trek book will be coming out, and that is one that fans have to get, because if you're a fan of Discovery at all, we just take you places that you would never see on set.
Cool.
And they let us show it. So it's going to be really, really cool book.
Yeah, I want that.
yeah.
Definitely want that. Do you know when it's coming out? Any idea yet?
We're going to Kickstarter it right after episode 9 airs. So 5 airs this week, so in a month from now.
Okay.
And only because there's lots of, you know, Easter eggs and things within the book, and little spoilers, so we can't really show any of the book until that our episode comes out. So after episode 9, look for it on Kickstarter.
That makes sense. That saves people from being spoiled, and
yeah,
it's so easy for it to happen that it's better that you wait.
Yeah, and Kickstarter takes a month, so by that point, kind of back times, and almost the whole season will be finished, but not all of it.
Cool. Yeah, I want to see. I want that book definitely.
Oh, you're gonna like it. There's really, if you're a fan of that show, they really let us shoot it in cool ways.
Cool. Anyway, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Sherry.
And thank you for chatting, Sherry.